Good afternoon, Juno. It's nearly 3 p.m. It's time for another edition of A Juno Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'll be your host for today. On the show, I'll be talking with Tim Olson, here to highlight the KTOO news changes, which are effective today. We'll learn about Theater at Latitude 58's production of Calamity Jane. Samuel Hudson will be here with details about Tuesday's Veterans Listening Section at the Mendenhall Library. And we'll talk with cyclist Janice Schofelt about her presentation highlighting her winning the Race Across America. These guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and lots more for Monday, November 17th, 2014. Stay tuned. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. First Nations leaders in Manitoba are angry over the beating and sexual assault of a 16-year-old girl in Winnipeg. Renelle Harper was left for dead near the banks of a river. She was found by two construction workers who called for help. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, there are similarities to another incident that took place earlier this year.
Renelle Harper has now been released from a Winnipeg hospital and is with her parents, who have come to the city while she recovers. They are from the Garden Hill First Nation, but Renelle has been living in Winnipeg for the past 2 years while attending high school. Earlier this month, she was beaten and sexually assaulted and then thrown from a bridge into the Assiniboine River. She managed to get to the riverbank and dragged herself ashore, but then she was assaulted a second time with a baseball bat and left for dead. Police described the attack as horrific. Two men, one aged 20, the other 17, have been arrested and face charges of attempted murder and sexual assault. First Nations leaders are calling on Winnipeg's new mayor to improve relations with Aboriginal people. David Harper is a grand chief from northern Manitoba.
We have a new mayor in town. He's got to be able to open those doors for us First Nations to be able to go talk to him, to be able to say, look, these are the things that we can change. These are the things that we need to change.
Family and friends say Renelle Harper is lucky to be alive. Meanwhile, police are looking for a link between the attack on Harper and the killing earlier this year of another Aboriginal teenager, Tina Fontaine. She disappeared in August after running away from foster care. The 15-year-old's lifeless body was pulled from the Red River a week later. There are similarities between the cases, but police have not linked them. Meanwhile, both incidents have led to the renewal of calls for a public inquiry in Canada into the hundreds of cases of missing or murdered Aboriginal women and girls. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
MTV premiered one episode of a six-part series of documentaries about youth, music, and global social change online last week. Rebel Music, Native America is told through four Indigenous artists. Polly Dinetclaw reports on one of them.
Mike Cliff, Oglala Lakota, says his music is to inspire young people to overcome challenges they face in life. Cliff grew up on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. In the film, he talks about seeing bad stuff on the reservation like violence. In this clip, he encourages his little brother, who's dealing with a parent with substance abuse problems.
I always see you depressed, man, even after I talk to you. I just want you to know there's still something else, you know?
Yeah.
As miserable as it is here, there's, you know, all you have to do is work hard right now, because you'll eventually be out in the world doing your thing just like I am. I think no one cares about you, bro. I think about you every day. I want to guide you and help you, you know what I mean?
He says he struggled to leave and eventually moved to Phoenix, Arizona. Cliff says there he worked a 9-to-5 job but realized it wasn't for him. He decided to pursue music and is now working with other Indigenous artists to help address issues facing their communities. Cliff's message to young people is to see that failure doesn't define their future.
I could have given up. I have given up plenty of times. Doesn't mean anything. Always move forward. Because where we're at as a people, we can't give up.
Cliff says the documentary with MTV is an opportunity to reach youth around the world. He says it was a positive experience and they had a lot of input on how their stories are told. Rebel Music Native America has received much positive response on social media. The episode is set to air on television. It is currently available for digital download and streaming. For National Native News, I'm Polly Dinetclaw.
A ribbon cutting for a Native American museum was held Friday in Cleburne, Texas. The Big Bear Native American Museum showcases Native life with a collection of items from several time periods. It's being tagged as one of a few museums dedicated to Native Americans in Texas. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Science, technology, engineering, and math students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Personalized instruction, rigorous curricula, undergrad research opportunities. New Mexico Tech, where the smart kids go. Info in Winds of Change magazine or visit nmt.edu. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Striking Eagle Invitational Basketball Tournament and Educational Fair on December 31st. Information on services and the fair at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And my first guest on the show today is Tim Olson, and Tim wears a lot of hats around here, so I'd like to welcome him to the show and have him introduce himself to our listening audience and tell everybody exactly what you do here at KTOO.
Well, I work in news and public affairs, and people who listened to the news this morning and people who will be listening this week, if they already were listening to All Things Considered this morning and the morning schedule, they'll realize there were some changes. And there are several things that have been in the works that we've changed just recently, and those changes went into effect today. And I thought I would explain a little bit about why and how that has taken place. And it doesn't mean less news. It actually means a little bit more and more newscasts, but the times have changed a little bit on several things. A lot of people may not know that every national public radio program that we get from NPR has a template for that show. It's a time clock that describes how every part of the hour is used. And local newscasts, for instance, during All Things Considered, the newscasts that Matt Miller provides fit into that time clock. The time clock for All Things Considered and Morning Edition have not changed in 20 years. So Matt's Morning Edition clock he's used the same time clock for a very long time. Over the last year and a half or so, NPR has been looking at how to change those time clocks and work with all the local stations throughout the country, and that unveiled across the country today. While Morning Edition still goes from starts at 4 a.m., Morning Edition on KTO is from 4 to 8, and Matt has added a newscast at 5:44 a.m. If you were up really early this morning, you would have heard a Morning Edition newscast with Matt doing local news at 5:44. There are 12 newscasts throughout the day. During Morning Edition, there are 4 newscasts an hour, of local newscasts an hour, but the times have changed a little bit. From the 6 to 7 hour and the 7 to 8 hour, there is a newscast at 4 minutes after the hour, 20 after the hour, at 6:30 and 7:30, 30 minutes after the hour, and then again at 44 minutes after the hour. So while we're not doing less news, the times have changed a little bit. From 8 to 10 now, the Juno audience has 2 hours of Here and Now, pretty popular show covering mostly breaking news with Robin Young and Jeremy Hobson. That runs from 8 to 10 starting this week, and from 10 to 12 On Point from WBUR. Again, a very popular program. Tom Ashbrook is on leave right now, but the program continues on. So those are fairly major changes. There's an 8:20 newscast in Here and Now, a breakaway here for local news. So between 5:44 a.m. and 8:20 a.m., there are 10 newscasts throughout the morning. We're not changing the middle of the day. There's still the midday newscast at 12:30. Just very recently, you may have noticed, listeners, that Casey Kelly is hosting All Things Considered in the afternoon now. And that newscast in the afternoon is now going to be at 4:44 p.m. We think that helps people who are commuting after getting off work at the 4:30 hour to catch the newscast. It was at the bottom of the hour before. So those are some of the general changes that have, more specific changes in terms of when the newscasts are, and general changes in the Monday through Friday news schedule.
Well, Tim, was this basically initiated by NPR, or was it the affiliates that were asking for maybe a little bit more latitude in different times to plug in local broadcasting?
Well, it's a good question. I think, they've been working on it for a long time, and there's been a lot of give and take. There's a lot of research that shows the way that people use newscasts and use their news has changed over the years. Of course, People in Juneau know, well, many know that KTOO.org offers a great deal of news. You know, there's other ways to get news besides radio. It really was a collaboration. I think that, you know, there's a group of member station folks that have been on a panel that have been working on this, and it's been in the works for some time. So it really was a group effort between the folks at National Public Radio and all of the NPR stations.
Okay. Is there any change to our online content?
No. You know, the online content continues to grow. KTOO.org is an award-winning top news information site in the state of Alaska. There is continually more and more interesting things to see online. One thing you can find online right now is if you want to know more about these new changes in the news, you can go.
I was trying to lead right into
there's
that.
There's a button there that says morning news changes, a red button on there. You can click on it, and it shows you the little time clock that we've been talking about. I also want to point out that there are a couple of regular things that happen every week. Talk of Alaska on Tuesdays, that's not changing. Talk of Alaska will still be on Tuesday at 10, and Science Friday will still be on Friday at 10 o'clock. I recommend if people find out that, you know, the newscasts during the morning are not exactly at the same time they were hearing them before, they're right, and they can see that in a clock form at KTOO.org on that button that says morning news changes.
Okay, are pretty much everybody is excited about these changes because we actually get to plug in more news than we did.
Well, there are more newscasts. There's as much news as there was before. It's at different times. I think if you had your coffee maker or your alarm clock set to wake up in the morning with Matt on a particular newscast, you might find that it has changed just a little bit. The exact timing that they start are not the same. But we're excited about it. I think this first week here, it's going to be different for everybody. I'm sure for Matt at 5:40 in the morning, that's his whole time schedule is off a little bit, and he's been doing it for many years. But I listened this morning, and I thought it sounded pretty good.
All right. Well, lastly, I wanted to ask you, since these changes went into effect today, did we get any phone calls over this? Has anybody complained, or did anybody say, hey, I noticed the changes, and what's going on?
So I have not checked since lunchtime, but I think there were two comments. Somebody asked, okay, why is this changed? And someone else said that they hadn't figured out the timing yet. And so there have been a couple people that have commented. And, you know, we want comments on this. So anyone who has a suggestion or would like to chime in and let us know what they think, you know, it's going to take a week or two here to kind of get the feel for it. And I think once people get the feel for it, they might really like it. But if you have comments, you can go to ktoo.org and contact us. And after you look at the morning clock changes button there and see it all drawn out and explained for you. There's a little FYI on there that explains why and how some of these changes were made. We would love to hear what folks think.
Okay. Well, Tim Olson, again, it's a little bit of a shakeup, but I think it's pretty good. We got a little bit more time to punch in our broadcasts throughout the day, and you know, I think that's always a good thing for us to get our local news on the air.
Probably most noticeable during morning edition, and what you'll notice is that there are four really good newscasts each hour during morning edition from 5:44 until 8 o'clock. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, Tim Olson, thank you very much for being the first guest on the show today.
Thanks, Ken.
All right, and recently a survey was completed highlighting the future needs of Juneau's growing senior population, housing and services for Juneau seniors, including a recently completed market demand survey that supported the need for senior assisted living in our community. You can join a panel of concerned citizens, including Sue Douglas, chair of the Assisted Living for Seniors Task Force and chair of Senior Citizen Support Services Incorporated, tonight at 7 o'clock on KTOO News as we explore the findings and recommendations of the committee live on the air. So this is tonight, a special news program that meets seniors' needs at 7 o'clock on KTOO News, Juneau 104.3 FM, and online at www.ktoo.org. You can actually click the button on the upper right-hand corner. It says Listen Live, and a little drop-down box comes on, and you can just click on KTOO, and you'll be able to hear the broadcast that way if you can't pick it up on 104.3. So everybody tune in tonight if you're interested in that program about seniors' needs. And here's Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, November the 17th, 2014. It's the birthday of Shelby Foote, born in Greenville, Mississippi, 1916. When he was 15 years old, a boy named Walker Percy moved to town. They were the same age. They became lifelong best friends. Both of them went to the University of North Carolina. And after a couple of years, Shelby Foote dropped out, joined the Army. He said, "Southerners are known for joining in whatever military action is going on, partly because they don't want anything that big going on in the world without being part of it." And in the Army, he started work on his first novel. Came back to Greenville, took part of the novel, made it into a story, sent it to the Saturday Evening Post. They accepted it. They paid him $750. He sent them a longer story. They accepted that, sent him a check for $1,500. And then he sent them an even longer story, and they rejected it. They said, "We regret to inform you that the Saturday Evening Post doesn't publish stories about incest." He said, "I was sort of relieved. I had a strong feeling that it was not supposed to go on like this." But his success at the Post inspired him to quit his job, become a full-time writer. He wrote his novel Shiloh about the Civil War, and then spent 20 years working on a three-volume series, The Civil War, a narrative. Over a million words, he wrote it all by hand, and then was featured on the Civil War documentary on PBS, and that made him a best-selling author. It's the birthday of Lorne Michaels, born in Toronto, 1944. He was a comedy writer, first for Canadian television, and then for American acts, Lily Tomlin, Joan Rivers, Woody Allen. And then NBC asked Michaels to come up with a comedy show to replace the Johnny Carson reruns that were showing Saturday nights at 11:30. It was 1975. He hired a fellow Canadian, Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, Chevy Chase, a recent Harvard grad named Al Franken, and it was the first season of Saturday Night Live. And it's the birthday of Martin Scorsese, born in the Flushing section of Queens in New York, 1942. His early films, Mean Streets, Taxi Driver, got good reviews. His musical, New York, New York, was a big flop in 1977. Scorsese thought his career might be over. He started drinking too much, wound up in the hospital, and Robert De Niro came to see him and told him they had to make the movie that they'd been talking about for years, about the boxer Jake LaMotta. And Scorsese poured the next few years of his life into making that movie, Raging Bull. It was a big success when it came out in 1980. Here's a poem by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, A Child's Evening Prayer. "Ere on my bed, my limbs I lay, God grant me grace, my prayers to say. O God, preserve my mother dear in strength and health for many a year. And, oh, preserve my father, too, and may I pay him reverence due, and may I my best thoughts employ to be my parents' hope and joy. And, oh, preserve my brothers both from evil doings and from sloth, and may we always love each other, our friends, our father, and our mother. And still, O Lord, to me impart an innocent and grateful heart, that after my last sleep I may awake to thy eternal day. Amen." The Child's Evening Prayer by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
I'm Matt Miller, Morning Edition host on KTOO.
And I'm Casey Kelly, host of All Things Considered. KTOO and NPR are making some changes in the morning and evening news lineup.
Catch our new early newscast at 5:44 in the morning. Then you'll hear local news at 4 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and 44 minutes past the hour.
And on All Things Considered, you'll hear our local newscast now at 4:45 p.m. To learn more about the changes, visit ktoo.org.
3:20 p.m. and a Juno afternoon continues. My next guests are from Theater at Latitude 58's production of Calamity Jane, and they are Karen Allen, Cinnamon Simpson, Sarah Everett, and Rebecca Shetke. Welcome all four of you to the show today.
Thank you.
Okay, Calamity Jane, folk hero. Why is she called Calamity?
Well, the historical character's name was Martha Jane Canary, but she acquired the name when someone told her she was a good person to have around in a time of calamity. However, the play Calamity Jane is based off of the 1953 movie that starred Doris Day and bears only the most nodding resemblance to historical accuracy.
Okay.
It is a musical comedy and a tall tale.
All right. What can people expect from Calamity Jane?
They can expect all kinds of Wild West hijinks, singing, dancing, shooting, guy in a dress, you name it, we got it all.
Okay, well, let's talk about starring roles. Who's playing Jane?
Calamity Jane is played by Sarah Penrose. She's a junior at Juno Douglas High School. Or no, at Thunder Mountain High School, forgive me. And then here with me, I have Rebecca Shetke, who's playing Wild Bill Hickok, and Sarah Everett, who's playing Lieutenant Daniel Gilmartin. And Maggie Comstock is playing the lovely Katie Brown, and Abigail Zahasky is playing the elegant Adelaide Adams.
Right.
And we have Cinnamon Simpson here, who helps hold up the bar.
Yeah.
are you the surly bartender and barkeep in this thing?
No, I'm not even that illustrious. I just seriously hold up the bar. So I do.
All right. Okay, and who selected this play? How did you all come about for this selection?
Well, kids lobbied for it for a surprising amount of time, actually, which surprises me because it's a play from my mother's generation. But as we were looking at things to do this fall, Cinnamon and I tossed ideas back, forth, left, right, sideways, and somehow this is the one that stuck. And it is incredibly fun. I mean, it features songs like Secret Love, which was one of Doris Day's biggest hits. It has just wonderful, fun music.
All right, and is there anything that's really stand out about your parts, Sarah, Rebecca?
Well, I'm the only one in the cast who has a sword. I'm the military man who Calamity Jane is infatuated with, Lieutenant Danny, and it's really a lot of great fun. You'll have to come and see what we do because I won't give it away.
Something that stands out about me is that I just am really a really big jerk. Like, in all honesty, my character is a jerk, and it's a lot of fun, and I get to pull my guns all the time, and it's just fun.
So are you sort of the villain type in this play, or not quite that much?
You're just
a nuisance, right?
I'm just a nuisance, really.
Calamity and Bill have a wonderful – some shows have love songs. This is a hate song. Where they sing just about how much they can live without each other, and yet neither of them can seem to live. But they throw each other around and hit each other, and it's kind of epic.
However, Lieutenant Danny and Katie Brown have a nice, lovely love song together.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
you get both. You get hate songs and love songs, but it's just a whole lot of Western fun.
All right, let's talk about production. Rehearsal time, how long have you been rehearsing for this?
We've rehearsed, I think, for 13 weeks.
That's
is that
right.
approximately right?
Yep, that's about
yeah,
right.
Yeah, we started right in the beginning of September, and we've been having a great time rehearsing in houses of worship. We've been at the Douglas United Community Methodist Church.
Good
Did
girl.
I get those in
you
the right
got
order?
It right. Good girl.
Got all of it.
We've rehearsed in their basement. We have rehearsed at Congregation Sukkot Shalom, the synagogue, and we rehearsed at the mall for a little while. We've been all over the place. We've had a wonderful time. We've also had a good time working with our friends from Opera Go, who are co-producing it with us.
Yes.
They provided us with our wonderful conductor, Amy Bibb. We're meeting with her tonight to sing through with our orchestra.
Okay. Set construction and set changes, how much of that goes on in the show?
Our set is very simple for this show. Our wonderful designer, George Watt, put together a set that pretty much covers everything with only having to move some furniture. So the show does not have to slow down or stop for big set changes.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So then is there one or two intermissions?
One intermission.
One intermission in the confines of the play. Okay. Well, it sounds pretty fabulous. Cinnamon, anything else you wanted to add?
Other than, again, a blessing to all of the families that let me hang out with them this time, get to be on stage with them. It has been just so much fun.
It has been a treat to have you on stage.
Well, thank you.
All right. And before we pick up a couple things that I haven't even had a chance to listen to, it just says Latitude 58.1, music from play. So I have no idea what I'm getting here, but
it'll
I just know that it's got 2 minutes and 50 seconds. So let's tell everybody when the play is going to take place or what dates you're going to be performing and the costs, if any.
Oh, fantastic. So we are performing at TMHS Friday the 21st at 7 p.m., Saturday the 22nd at 2 p.m., and at 7 p.m., and again on Sunday at 2 p.m. Tickets are available on Vendini or at the door, and those are $10 for students and $15 for adults.
Okay, that sounds pretty reasonable for everybody to see Calamity Jane.
Oh, it's a whole lot of family fun.
On just four shows, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, get it while getting good.
Okay, very good. Thank you all four for being our guests on the show. And now I'm going to play some music from the play, and I have no idea what's coming here.
Come on, then. Get it out. When I'm longing for a bike to eat, instead of complaining, I pick a song and with the right upbeat, I start entertaining a little of this. A little of that. A penny miss to put in me at. I can tap a little with my feet without any training.
Okay, if you were in the studio right now, you'd hear about five people laughing uncontrollably. Because although this was uploaded, it says Latitude 58 music from play. It's not from this play. So let's cancel this one out. And let's see what the other one is, because this also says Latitude 58 music from play. So let's see what we got here. Is this anything that you're familiar with?
Welcome to Mississippi's Gold Shop.
Okay, again, a multitude of laughter from the studio because not a one of these tracks is from that play. So, anyways, Calamity Jane has some music, but darned if I know what it's going to sound like here. You're going to have to buy your tickets and actually show up Friday, two plays on Saturday, and one play again on Sunday in order to hear any of the music from Calamity Jane. All right. Well, as we're waiting to get the next guests into the room, here's Jefferson Starship with Jane.
I'll have to just hear it more.
Take it, see it. KTOO programming is made possible in part by Juneau's own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juneau stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
And that was Jefferson Starship with Jane, which also has nothing to do with Calamity Jane. So just want to make that clear. We got a couple of songs in, but not a one of them was from that play. So anybody that wants to go, again, it's going to be at Thunder Mountain this Friday, 2 shows on Saturday, and 1 show again on Sunday. But a Juno afternoon continues. It's 3:32 p.m., and my guests are here with details about Tuesday's Veterans Listening Section. Session, at the Mendenhall Library, and I'll let them introduce themselves as they go here. And my first guest is...
Hi, my name is Susan Yeager, and I'm the director of the Alaska VA Healthcare System.
Okay, and next?
Hi, my name is Michelle Peterson. I'm the enrollment coordinator with the Alaska VA.
And lastly?
I'm Doris Yanis-House. I'm the Chief of Health Administration Service with the Alaska VA.
Okay, welcome all three of you to the show, and yeah, we can drag that mic down there for you, Doris. All right, Susan, let's get a little bit more information about how did this get started, and I know this is all about getting information out to veterans, of which I am proud to say I'm one of you.
All right.
Let's find out who started this and why it's necessary to get information out to veterans about their potential benefits.
Okay, thanks, Ken, and really appreciate this opportunity to be here with you this afternoon to share some information about the VA. As you might know, we have a clinic here in the federal building, and we've had that clinic open for about 4 years now, since 2010. But there's a lot been going on in the VA, as many people have heard, many things going in the lower 48, and it certainly reaches Alaska. There's a new program called the Veterans Choice Act. August 7, 2014, President Obama signed a law. And the law is Veterans Access, Choice, and Accountability Act of 2014. And so what we're trying to do is get the word out to all the veterans in Alaska. What does that really mean to them? And how can that affect their decisions about VA health care? And what does this mean in terms of a new choice? So what we normally do on a quarterly basis is, as the director and have team members come with me, we go to every VA site where we have a clinic. And, you know, we have clinics now in Alaska up in Fairbanks, in the Matsu Valley. In Anchorage is our bigger clinic. Our relationship with the joint venture of the Air Force, we have that hospital there that we share. Also in the Kenai Peninsula and here in Juneau, we have clinics. So on a quarterly basis, we come down and we talk to our staff at the clinics, which we'll talk to our staff tomorrow and kind of give them an update on the VA, what's going on. And then we just started. This will be the second time now that we will be tagging on a public meeting with all the veterans, a listening session, you might say, to share information to veterans, with veterans, and also to hear back from them what's going on with their relationship with the VA. So this is really the second time, officially, we're doing this community town hall, and we will continue this every quarter because we want to have an ongoing relationship and to continue to share information. And so that will be from 6:30 to 8 p.m. tomorrow night at the Mendenhall Valley Library. And so we really hope to see as many veterans as we possibly can tomorrow night. In addition to the folks here in the room that are going to be talking to you today, we're from the VHA part of the VA. And I know it can get confusing, and we are a bureaucracy, but we're from the healthcare part of VA. There's other parts of VA that folks, we really want to share the knowledge. And so tomorrow night at the town hall, we'll have representatives from another one of the sections, and that's called Veterans Benefits Administration. And so those folks will come down from Anchorage and help veterans to answer questions about this Choice Act and claims they may have. And if someone needs to get a home loan or work on their compensation, those folks will be here with us tomorrow night. They're coming down. So, and then the third part of the VA is Memorial Affairs. And so what we believe in Alaska, and we're very fortunate in Alaska, that we try to work together as one VA so that when the veteran comes for questions and needs assistance, we're all there together to help on the continuum of help for them, whether it be health care, benefits, education benefits, home loans, compensation. So tomorrow night, we're very fortunate to have Mr. Franco come up from the lower 48. He's the supervisor of the of Chad Pomelo, who's the head of the Veterans Benefits for Alaska. So he'll be here with us tomorrow night because we really want to share information about the VA, answer questions, and then also to listen to the veterans about what's going on. So we're very excited about this opportunity.
All right, Susan, and we know from listening to the news that there's been some nightmare stories about people waiting like way long for VA care. Is that problem exclusive to sites down there, or have we seen some of that up here in Alaska? How is it moving through the bureaucracy to process claims and get people seen up here?
Well, as you know, the VA is a complex situation. What occurred in the lower 48, many of you know, heard that something that happened, that electronic waitlist issue of Phoenix VA, that's reached up to us in Alaska, and that's pretty much what's caused this and reaction of VA and the Congress to this Veterans Choice Act. But in Alaska, we have a long tradition of partnering with the private sector and the native, the tribal organizations, and the military. And so when the whole electronic wait list, and that's a list when a veteran can't get their appointment in a timely way, they go on this list, that we started about a year and a half ago to actually partner with providers in the private sector to provide primary care. Traditionally, Alaska had been purchasing specialty care. Since 2011, it was decided that veterans in Alaska should receive all the care they can possibly receive in Alaska if it's available. It used to be folks would be going down to Seattle VA a lot, but that's pretty much stopped in 2011. And since that time, we've been increasing our relationships and partnerships with the private sector and the community sector, and we have Native agreements, 26 different Native tribal organizations, so that we can keep veterans in Alaska and get their timely care. So we did not have an electronic wait list at the time when this whole thing hit in the lower 48 because we had been partnering with the community before that, a year before that time, to get that care in a timely way.
Right. I expect that some of this came about because some of our veterans are in remote locations, mm-hmm. and it's not easy for them to get to a VA facility.
Absolutely.
So that's why they're going to private care and having to pursue that route.
Absolutely. Alaska is one of the few VAs in the country that does not have its own VA inpatient medical facility. We do partner with the Air Force and others around the state. So we're a little unique. Every VA I've been to over the last 35 years in the VA, every VA is unique across the country. In Alaska, though, we're very unique in that we don't have that medical center, so we have that tradition of purchasing care and partnering with others in the community. I would like to mention that tomorrow night, encouraging veterans, if they have issues and concerns, we have brought other people down from Anchorage to help work individual casework. Because the VA is, there's different 8 priority groups, and there's each person's in a slightly different situation. So it's hard to give an answer of a one-size-fits-all, you might say. So we do bring other people here to actually sit there and work out individual veterans' concerns and resolve their, you know, any challenges that they may have. But, yes, Alaska is very challenging, you know, as we know, very few roads. And as I tell people in the lower 48, we're 2.5 times the size of Texas up here. We're not that small little state off of Baja that they might see on the map.
With about as much roads as Rhode Island. So that's pretty
right.
much it. Yeah.
So travel continues to be a challenge for veterans in receiving their care.
All right, Susan, and what benefits might veterans not know that they're eligible for?
Well, there's a whole continuum of benefits, and it has changed over the last few years. So many, for example, I'll just give an example. Some veterans may not realize they might have a benefit for hearing aids. We do see a lot of veterans in general, and Alaska's no exception, that because of being in the military, it can be very hard on hearing. So I do find out as I go around the state that many veterans don't really realize that they could potentially be eligible for hearing aids and for hearing exams. So that's why we like to have these outreaches so that we can better explain what the full continuum of care that the VA can provide. Once a veteran in Alaska is in the system, you might say, is eligible by filling out that 1010 easy form, becomes eligible for health care, then based on clinical necessity, that benefit package pretty much covers the whole spectrum. And I think Doris, once is our chief of our eligibility and travel section, can add more to that.
Yeah.
And I really want to simplify the process of getting enrolled with the VA healthcare. A couple of years ago, before the Affordable Care Act came into play, the form, the application for healthcare is about 4 pages long. And they have simplified it now to where it's only 2 pages. And you can do it online. You can email it to us once you're done with it, fax it to us. It's so simple that a lot of people just kind of like don't know how to go about doing that.
Right.
Because when they receive service conditions.
And how would somebody like me go about doing this in person? If I were to come tomorrow night, what do I need to bring with me?
If you want to bring your DD-214, it's not necessary for enroll with healthcare. We have another system that we can look, but bring the DD-214 with you anyway. Yeah, okay. And we can go from there.
Yep. We can find you in the system. Yep. And if you're not in the healthcare system, then to help get you in the system. And that's something that Michelle does with us a lot on these outreach, is we're amazed to find out, many veterans say, well, how do I get healthcare? And the first step is filling out that 1010 Easy form.
Okay, well, I may be joining you tomorrow night then, because I haven't filled out the thing. I haven't gotten a card yet. So.
Okay.
But I am registered through the online website, which you can get into. It's veterans.gov, I believe it is. And you can get registered. They can find your records and pull that up. So you can not only get registered for healthcare, but you can also get access to the VA loan system.
Yes. There's the two main systems in the VA, is the My Healthy Vet VA website, which is primarily healthcare, and then the VBA, the benefits side, is called the
e-benefits
program.
Yeah.
So e-benefits, and that's where you say we could pull down forms and find information on yourself and your service and find applications. One thing we find, too, frequently is many veterans, they think that they might have not applied soon enough. And so they think their time has run out. So we do try to let veterans know there is no time limit for the benefits. So we do see a lot of Vietnam veterans in Alaska. There have been some changes on relating to Agent Orange exposure. And so we do encourage all veterans, even if they tried the VA in the past, there have been changes. Please give the VA another chance to talk about benefits that they may have earned. No time limit.
All right. This is a huge thing. I'm hoping that a lot of people turn out, because I know there's a lot of veterans up here. But it's the Mendenhall Library tomorrow night at 6:30. Is that right?
That's correct. 6:30 to 8 p.m. And we'll be looking forward to as many veterans as we possibly can see. And we'll have quite a few staff there. And it'd be nice, too, if we certainly welcome any media to attend. Because our purpose here is to get information out to veterans so that they can access the services that they've earned through their service.
All right. Susan, Michelle, Doris, thank you all for being guests on our show today. Very informative topic.
Thank you, Ken.
I'm Matt Miller, host of Morning Edition. NPR and KTOO are making some changes to the news programs you hear on KTOO.
I'm Casey Kelly, host of All Things Considered. The NPR news magazine Here and Now moves to weekdays at 8 a.m., followed by On Point from 10 a.m. to noon.
Talk of Alaska will still be on Tuesdays at 10 o'clock, and Science Friday still airs Friday mornings at 10.
To learn more about the changes, visit KTOO.org.
The Juno Family Health and Birth Center isn't just for babies. The center supports the whole family, offering massage therapy, prenatal, birth and postpartum support, well woman care, and community classes. An advanced nurse practitioner now offers a variety of services to women of all ages to help meet health care needs. All insurances, including Aetna and Medicaid, are accepted. Discounted services are available for those who qualify. For an appointment or more information, contact the Juno Family Health and Birth Center at 586-1203.
This is Bird Note. The plains and the prairies, wide open spaces where the wind blows free, where there are few hills or elevated perches, where the rough-legged hawk goes hunting. When the air is still, it's inclined to rest, but as the wind picks up, the rough-legged hawk takes to the sky. It defies gravity, flying upwards with just enough force, hovering in midair with rapidly beating wings and lowered feet and tail, looking for its prey of lemmings, voles, and short-tailed mice that are active during the day. After breeding on Arctic cliffs and tundra hillsides in summer months, rough-legged hawks winter all across the Northern Hemisphere. Open country is their ideal territory, where the small rodents they depend on are usually so plentiful that the hawks have enough to eat. But the rodents are cyclic, with lower populations in some years, and in those winters, roughlegs may migrate farther and be more abundant in the lower 48. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. Find us at birdnote.org.
3:47 p.m. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. My last guest on the show today is Janice Schufelt. She is the speaker for this month's Bike Adventure Series talk, and she won the Women's Race Across America division this past summer. And you rode a little over 3,000 miles in 11 days, 18 hours, and 2 minutes. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, now I did a little bit of math before we went on the air, and that means you averaged 11 miles per hour, 24 hours a day for the entire race. So it was just about 11 miles an hour for the entire race. And that's assuming that you rode day and night, never slept, never ate, never stopped. But we know that isn't the case.
Right.
You can describe the difference to the listeners between some of the European grand tours, like the Tour de France, you know, that everybody's kind of familiar with, Lance Armstrong racing in that, and the Race Across America. Now, this is two different kind of setups, isn't it?
Yeah, the Race Across America is a nonstop race. So once you cross the start line, the clock doesn't stop until you get to the finish line. And the Tour de France has a different stage every day. So they might race 100 miles a day, and then they stop, and they're done. And then they do it again the next day. But the Race Across America is nonstop. So whenever I got off the bike, the clock kept running. Also, in the Race Across America, there's no drafting. Like, you can't ride with anyone else. You can't get that wind advantage like you see in the Tour de France, the way they ride together.
So this is basically, and while I know that there are teams that race in this race as well, but they're sort of riding just to keep the other company then, or
no,
how do they do that?
The team category for Race Across America is you can have 2, 4, or 8-person teams. I actually did a 2-person team in 2013. And when you're on a team, you only one person is riding at a time and the other person is resting. And then you can switch whenever you want. So, for example, in 2013, I would ride an hour, and then my teammate would ride an hour, and we did that hour on, hour off the whole way.
So did you get to follow them in a car or something? Is
that
right. How you did that?
Yes, there's okay. A lot of logistics involved with the Race Across America, support cars and crew, et cetera.
All right, and I know that some people have been riding for charity with sponsors and pledges. So
yes.
Did you have any of those on this last one for your win?
No, I just really focused on doing the race, so I didn't do any charities.
And how did you break up the problem of rest versus being on the bike and sleep? And I did have somebody at work ask me, what about the seat? And I was like, this is not a banana seat. This had to be something comfortable for, you know, if you're going to ride over 3,000 miles. So, yeah, all right,
yeah.
we're going to talk about
okay,
that.
Okay, we'll talk about the important things here. That's good. I like it. For sleep, the key with Race Across America is to be off the bike as little as possible. And so my plan was to sleep 90 minutes per night, which is one REM sleep cycle. And that's essentially what I did. Towards the end, I had to take a couple extra sleep breaks, and then I did fall asleep on my bike once in Missouri, so I had to stop and take a nap in the day, things like that. But generally, I slept 90 minutes a night, and that's a big part of the race. It's just how much sleep deprivation can you handle as a human being?
Okay, and what are the physical demands for food like while you're riding?
Yes.
And how do you handle that?
Well, food generally is about 8,000 calories a day, and basically I ate all the time whenever I could. I ate a lot of real food. I couldn't just eat, you know, power bars and stuff like that.
Right. Well, nobody's going to be feeding you spaghetti while you're riding. So, I mean, like, how do you handle that? And what were you looking mostly for, high protein content in order to keep going?
Or? High calorie. More than
high
anything,
calorie.
It was just the total calories. So anything that was high calorie. And I had an RV as one of my support vehicles, and my friend Stacy Berkeset, who was on the crew, and she should be at the talk this Thursday, she cooked breakfast and dinner, so I would stop and go in the RV at 7 a.m. for breakfast and 7 p.m. for dinner. And then other than that, I just would eat quick bites whenever I was off the bike. So if I got off for one reason or another, I would just eat as much as I possibly could all the time.
Okay, I just had this vision of people handing you burgers from, you know, like the passenger window and stuff. Did any of that happen or not?
A little bit? A little bit, but mainly I needed to stop probably about every hour and a half anyway to use the bathroom and change clothes, whatever it was. I would take a quick break. The seat is a critical issue. I do have a seat that has a lot of cushion in it, much more than a normal road bike seat.
That's what I was saying. It's
but it's never enough. It's just not possible for there to be enough cushion.
Right. Okay, and what type of bike was it? I mean, is it a specialty bike, and how did you go about choosing it?
So it's a pretty standard bike. It's a Trek bike, and the model's called a Domani, and I bought it right here at Cycle Alaska in Juneau. So it's a standard road bike, but it does have special kind of features that make it more comfortable for endurance riding. So it's a very comfortable road bike.
And you said you're going to be giving a talk, and where is that going to be, and when is that going to be?
So I am giving a talk at Cycle Alaska this Thursday, November 20th at 5 p.m. So come on down. You just go in the regular entrance to the Cycle Alaska store, and they have a seating area in the back. So about 5 o'clock, it should be done about by 6:30. I'll have slides, and I think there might be food as well.
Okay. And before I let you go, how many women were competing in the division that you were in?
There were only 6 women who entered the race, and about 45 men entered the solo 2014 race across America. And that was tied for the largest women's field ever. So you don't get very many people who really volunteer to sign up for this kind of race.
That sounds pretty brutal when you're only sleeping 90 minutes a night.
It was brutal. I won't argue with that.
And how do your muscles – before I let you go, how do your muscles handle that?
Well, actually, my muscles were fine. I had a lot of other problems, but I had trained so much. I had this really incredible coach. So the muscles were actually no problem at all, but there were a lot of other challenges. So you have to come to the talk to find out.
All right. So, and that's going to be at Cycle Alaska at 5 p.m. on the 20th, which is just coming up in a few days. Janet Shufeld, thank you very much for being our guest on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my choice.
Say Lord.
I say Christ, I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein, or Superman.
So forget. say Kane.
You say John.
I say Wayne.
Hot dog.
I say Cooler Man. I don't want to be the president of America.
I say Smile.
I say Cheese.
Johnny A.
I say Please.
Income tax.
I say Jesus. I don't want to be a candidate for being number one again. Cause all I want to do is
bicycle.
Yeah.
Bicycle.
Bicycle. I want to ride my
bicycle. Bicycle.
Come on.
Bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
That was Queen with Bicycle Race. I, Janet, you know I had to run that one. All right, and Juno has got a Retired Educators Association potluck dinner meeting, and this is going to be held tonight at the Juno Senior Center at 5:30 p.m. for a social, and 6 o'clock for dinner, and 6:30 for the program. Lori Craig will be speaking on changes around the Mendenhall Glacier. And now I need to get to the weather forecast for this evening. Tonight's forecast is partly cloudy skies with some patchy fog developing, with lows around 30 to 35, except around 27 in wind-sheltered areas, and southeast winds at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, slight chance of rain in the morning, then rain likely in the afternoon with highs around 42, and northeast winds at 15 to 25 with higher gusts out of interior passes. Tomorrow night, rain likely with lows in the mid-30s to upper 30s, and southeast winds at 15 miles an hour. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, digital channel 871. We are also online on KTOO.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. I'm Ken Fix. I've been your host for today, and I hope to see you next Tuesday. All Things Considered is coming right up.
And primarily because people have decided that it's going to be significant.
Congress and the White House approach a showdown over the Keystone XL pipeline.
For Monday, November 17th, this is All Things Considered.